Hello and welcome everyone to With Hearts Wide Open, where we're learning to listen to our hearts, do what we love, and change the world. I'm your host, Kathy Forrest, founder of Celestial Forrest Institute, and I am so excited to be here today with my friend, Taria Ward. Welcome, Taria.
Thank you, Kathy. I always enjoy your events. I think you pull together such brilliant events on brilliant topics, and you have such heart and spirit and joy and humor, and I just really enjoy being with you. So,
well, it's exciting to be back with you too. All of those same things back at you. Taria Ward lives in Asheville, North Carolina, and I have to tell you, I was there just not very long ago. That place, it's amazing. She has a private practice there where she offers dream analysis, psychological, and spiritual guidance to clients from all parts of the world. Taria has worked intensely with her own and other people's dreams for more than 45 years, and nearly 30 years has been an avid student of Indigenous ways of knowing and being. She's conducted a monthly global community dream symposium since early 2017, wherein persons from all over the world come to share their dreams and listen to the collective dreaming mind. And that place is rich. I know that for a fact. Taria conducts retreats and vision quests, teaches online courses, and teaches to a wide audience in regular interviews and lectures. She offers private and oracular readings upon request. And I just have to say, you are in the perfect place to do that work. I've been there before, but I'd never experienced it like I experienced it when I was there. And I believe it was late September. And so, yeah, you are very well supported in that kind of work.
I agree. I'm in the perfect place. Asheville is, it's place out of place, time out of time. It's been compared to Paris, you know, right here in the south part of this country. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a wonderful, eclectic, vibrant place. So
For sure. So I love the topic, the call of the depth. The voice of vocation. So I don't even know what to say. Tell us why you chose that topic.
Okay. All right. I'm going to break it down a little bit. First of all, the call of the depths. I have been thinking a lot lately. I mean, basically my whole life, but very specifically and strongly lately, about the spirit of the depths, about that place in the soul of the world, of the psyche of the individuals in the world, that place that is so deep that there's no history there, there's no words there. That's the place that we all emerge from that doesn't even have a story. It's something so original in terms of our most basic makeup. And I've been feeling this draw and this call to enter into that silent place. Mm-hmm. And I find that it just takes opening my heart to it. It doesn't take like sitting down for hours and meditating and doing, you know, rigid, time-consuming things. It really just is a matter of attention and of knowing that it's there. But, you know, I think about that place I ran into, I didn't bring it with me, a quote of Einstein saying that he never reached any of his greatest insights through logical thinking at all. It always came out of those places of silence. Yeah. And I feel like it's those places that the spirit of those depths that call to us now, to get really underneath our personal stories and the stories in the collective that are so clashing with one another, and get to the real root of who we are as atoms and cells in this massive universal system of everything. So that, the call of the depths, and then the voice of vocation. I like that the word vocation, it comes from the word voice, that mm-hmm. the vocation is a calling. It's mm-hmm. like, and so I feel, I've been feeling that sort of image or sense of out of those depths comes this deep call. Mm-hmm. You can almost hear it like one of those powerful horns through the antler or something, you know, just the whole, you know, that call of our own spirit, you know, or of our own connection to spirit. Mm-hmm. And so, and so it's that voice, and it's finding that voice mm-hmm. and hearing that voice out of the call of the depths mm-hmm. that I feel we start to begin to really realize our own vocation in this world and what we are called to do and what is calling us that may be beyond everything we've been taught to think. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I've been thinking a lot as I was preparing my just thoughts for today. Buckminster Fuller kept coming to mind. I'll probably mention him a few times as we go. He was an early mentor of mine. My family knew him. But one of Bucky's main messages always when he spoke, he was a scientist, died in 1983, philosopher, one of the most profound thinkers of the last century. Deep and rich and powerful. But one of the things that he always spoke about was his guidance that we need to do our own thinking. And he talked about how as he was a little child, his mother was always saying, honey, it doesn't matter what you think. Listen to the teacher. That's, you know, think what they're thinking. Mm-hmm. And in the classroom and in the job, in the play, everywhere he went, it's like, it doesn't matter what you're thinking. Here's what you need to think. Right. So somebody's delivering this system of thought wherever he went. And he was a bright fellow and he mm-hmm. had some amazing insights. His stories are profound. If you're interested in his stories, you can go to YouTube and find some Buckminster Fuller little videos there. I'd love to tell them, but they're just profound. And so here's this little guy thinking, okay, well, whatever I think doesn't matter. I'm going to think what they're teaching me to think. And then ultimately in his late 20s, he decided he was an utter failure. He just couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And so he very seriously got to the brink of taking himself out because he just thought, I'm a failure. I'm no good. I'm no help here. Mm-hmm. And then he had a turnaround and got the message that he belonged to the universe, not to himself. And he had no right to do that. But then he went into silence for 2 years. And his deliberate intention was to stop thinking what others had taught him to think and start thinking for himself. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I feel like for all of us, we've been taught to think some things that are really valuable and helpful and utilitarian in our lives, and some of them deeply, profoundly spiritual and important to us. But in the depths of all of that is to listen to the call of really hearing our own thinking. Yeah. And learning to discern what is our thought in the midst of all the chatter and clatter of thoughts that we entertain all day long.
Right.
I would say probably 99% of that is what we've been taught to think. It's what we read, it's what we heard, it's what we, you know, concluded after a few experiences or whatever. It's all that going on. But in the depths of all that is listening to our own thought. And that is a calling. And once we reach into that calling, I feel like our lives will change in profound and important ways, and we'll follow that voice. We'll hear that voice, and we'll discern it. Mm-hmm.
So obviously, you've heard this voice. When did you begin to discern it for yourself, and what was that like?
Well, you know, Kathy, just considering talking about this with you today, I kind of went back. I think I would have started initially to say somewhere in midlife, I really got a grasp. Mm-hmm. But then I started realizing, no, it was really when I was really quite young. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember even in high school, having a boyfriend I adored. My family adored him. His family adored me. Everybody thought we were perfect together, and we were in many ways. And I remember saying to him, and I didn't remember this until years later, he sent me some of my old letters, mm-hmm. and I read them. And I said to him, I have to find out who I am. I can't be part of a couple now. Mm-hmm. It's just, I'll never be a whole person unless I learn to follow my own thread. Mm-hmm. And so I had to just figure out what it meant to follow my own nose, not be always thinking about, mm-hmm. you know, what other people needed for me to do or be or say, or right. how I needed to dress or think or whatever. You know, I really needed to follow my own nose. And so I did that, and it took me through the paths of life. You know, mm-hmm. I can really see how that deep intention that wasn't that clearly articulated to myself. I was kind of surprised when I saw it in that old letter, you know, I wrote it age 16 or 17.
Right.
But it, you know, it was a through line through my life working through that. And so, and I had really fortunate encounters mm-hmm. with people who supported that. For me, that I don't think everybody gets that blessing, but
right.
Yeah. So I had a spiritual teacher who was amazing. It wasn't all about what she thinks. It's about drawing out what you think. And then she made events and circumstances for us to continually find a voice for what it is that's our journey and our path. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a unique way of mm-hmm. holding together a spiritual community, which I thought was really valuable. And that was helpful, but, you know, so that I went through that. And then in my doctoral work in depth psychology, and then I went and moved out to the mountains of North Carolina, right an hour from Asheville. I lived on the top of a mountain in the middle of the wilderness all by myself for 8 years.
Wow.
So that I know was because I'd had some shattering experiences and that kind of led to that. And I knew I needed to listen, to find my own voice. I needed to find out what was guiding me and what was going to pull me through and pull me into the depths of my calling. And out of that has come the work that I've done the last many years. So,
wow. So did this calling require anything of you?
Well, I would say, yeah, it requires everything, really, basically.
Yeah.
And the thing I would say to know that a calling like this generally requires that the ego is going to be relativized beyond recognition. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's important for all of us to consider and reconsider and always hold together the notion that the difference between the self, the capital S self, as Jung referred to it, and the ego.
Yeah.
And that the ego is that tool that we use that uses the language, that knows how to say the polite thing and, you know, behave appropriately, follow the rules, do the things, do the jobs, read the textbooks, answer the questions, give the lectures, do the, you know, the ego does all those things, very valuable tool, but it is not the self.
Yeah.
And so often when things come that threaten the ego, it's because the self wants to emerge, but we feel mm-hmm. like we're dying. We feel like we feel humiliated mm-hmm. Devastated and shattered. Mm-hmm. And so it generally, I think finding that profound voice of the depths is going to require an ego death.
Yeah.
And sure. It's never a fun experience.
No, those are messy.
Yeah.
So how does, it's like, it's almost something that you have to feel versus understand when you talk about the depths. And vocation seems like something else. So right. What's the idea of vocation versus this other piece?
Right. Well, in in the definition that I am working with of vocation, or the sense or sensibility that I have around the idea of vocation, mm-hmm. it is that call from the depths. It okay. is that call to go through the ego death mm-hmm. As or when it's required. We don't invite it, and we, you know, mm-hmm. But as it comes, to go through that, you know, I'll say what vocation to me is not. Mm-hmm. It is not about your job necessarily. You're fortunate if it is, but mm-hmm. even at that, often our jobs, even no matter how soulfully we create them, require a lot of ego structure, which is yeah. good and valuable and necessary. But it's not the vocation of listening to those deeper parts of the world and the world's soul, and being willing to go through the uncertainties of sometimes stepping away from what those structures are internally and externally.
Yeah.
And it's not about making money. It's mm-hmm. you know, I always, when I was, I don't know, teenager, I heard Buckminster Fuller say that he learned to follow. I think he would probably say at that point where he decided not to end his life, but to mm-hmm. live doing his own thinking. He decided mm-hmm. to make sense, S-E-N-S-E, mm-hmm. rather than being motivated by sense, C-E-N-T-S.
Yeah.
And he said, as long as you're doing what makes sense, mm-hmm. sense will follow. The other will follow. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I sort of naively as a child trusted that. Mm-hmm. And I've pretty much lived by that. Mm-hmm. And I would say it works. I really believe in it. Mm-hmm. It works. And it's not that that there's anything wrong with making a whole lot, if that's, you know, if that's something that we know how to do, that's brilliant, that's lovely. Mm-hmm. But if it becomes our motivation, if the motivation is to make money rather than to make sense, S-E-N-S-E, then mm-hmm. we've lost our way, almost yeah. for sure,
yeah,
clearly. Yeah. So it's about keeping that vocation, is about keeping that voice of what makes sense to us mm-hmm. foremost, and allowing everything else that supports us sometimes to fall away, and then come back in another way, or sometimes mm-hmm. to just begin to open and flow in beautiful ways. But I really do believe if our priority there is that, then we're listening to what is the truest voice mm-hmm. in ourselves. And that's the vocation, the voice mm-hmm. of ourselves. And I brought a couple of quotes that I want to read at some point here. So I'll just do it now because I'm thinking of it. But one of them is this quote by William Stafford that I feel like is, I live by this, and I probably many of you know it and do too. He says, "There is a thread that you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change. People wonder about what you are pursuing. You have to explain about the thread, but it is hard for others to see. While you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen, people get hurt mm-hmm. or die, and you suffer and get old. Mm-hmm. Nothing you do can stop time's unfolding. You don't ever let go of the thread."
Yeah.
And I think any of us can look back through our lives and see how that thread has been the thing that mm-hmm. took us in and out of jobs, marriages, religions, mm-hmm. scholarly pursuits, mm-hmm. whatever creative pursuit, whatever the kinds of experiences that we've had, addictions, whatever, mm-hmm. there's a thread that took us through all the tragedies, all the beauties, all the grace, and everything else changes, but that thread doesn't change. And so that, I think, is a beautiful articulation of what that voice of vocation is. And yes. I'm also going to read this one from Dag Hammarskjöld. Mm-hmm. "I don't know who or what put the question. I don't know when it was put. I don't even remember answering. But at some point, I did answer yes to someone or something. And from that hour, I was certain that existence is meaningful, and that therefore my life in self-surrender had a goal.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
So you just described my life, although we can't even make the thread. We don't even know what it is, but we all know that we follow it just like a little puppy. Wow.
And at some point we said yes to it, right? Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Yeah. And I kind of, before I ever encountered this quote of Dag Hammarskjöld's, which means so much to me, and I keep it, you know, on my wall here. I had an experience, Kathy, that was one of those calls from the depths that made no sense at the time. But I remember I had small children. I remember walking in my house. I had like the walker and the diaper bag and all the stuff. And I was loaded like this. And just as I put it on the couch, something came through, and I can't say at all what it was, but it was maybe a foresight or a prophecy or a something, but it didn't have words, but I knew it was big. And I just said, yes, I said yes to that voice. And I was aware that that had happened. I didn't know what it was, but within probably a week of that started a whole ego shattering, horrible period of my life. It began then. And then I realized something in me knew, even though it was not predictable in the moment at all, something in me knew and said, yes, okay, all right, bring it on. I need to, this is meaningful. Mm-hmm. It's important. It's necessary. Mm-hmm. And it helped me somehow to know that.
Mm-hmm.
So if I think we can look at our own self conversations like that and see where are those moments when something assaults us, the world seems to assault us with these unwelcome, uninvited tragedies and events sometimes, but to find the place where we said yes, and to know that the meaning is pulling us through, like the thread, through these trials that we would never purposely invite into our lives, right? So that to me is the vocation, you know, the yes that we say to those events.
So there's once again, I can't describe it in words. It feels more like a feeling, but I hear and feel a lot of people saying things like, I want to know my purpose. What is my purpose? Blah, blah, you know, and then I hear you talk about the depth. And really what's in store when someone finds their purpose or says yes to their purpose. What would you recommend to our listeners for discerning whether it's a call from the depths of our being and a call from spirit, or if it's just chatter?
Well, that's a really good question. And I love the purpose question. You know, ultimately, I guess, based on what I'm unfolding here, I would say our purpose is to find that voice and to follow it. And it may not look like anything that we can put on a resume.
Right.
And so our purpose will take us through those things, but to be attached to them, overly identified to them, like, you know, I had to get over my identification with being a minister because, to my great surprise, I ended up, the thread took me into a place where I was resigning from the ministry, the last thing I ever thought I would do. Wow. So, and then marriage ended, and that was, you know, I was the frame of the mind that I would have stayed forever and ever and ever. Amen. Because it just was not. So now I was that. So it's like, we can't be attached to the identity of what even seems like so valuable and important and exactly what we want and exactly what's working. But, you know, as Joseph Campbell says, we have to be able to get rid of the life that we planned in order to welcome the life that is ours to live.
Right.
And so it's like to give up our plans. So our purpose may be for the next years, you're going to get a master's degree or get this job or go out in the wilderness and do this thing or follow these things. But I think it would be wise for us all to remember not to be too attached to the identity of that and allow things to change if they need to, as they need to, and maybe they won't need to. But, you know, we have to follow the thread through the changes. And so our purpose, I think, is to follow the thread.
Yeah.
And it may or may not look like something that our parents or social world would consider a career that we should could be proud of, or, you know, that we can put a asterisk by our name about.
So, right.
It takes courage and it takes humility to do all these things. And the main thing it takes, really, is love. And I'm going to read you a quote of Buckminster Fuller's that I just have been listening to Bucky lately. I just love him so much. But this one is so beautiful. I will say, knowing him, he was one of the most brilliant scientists. But the major experience that you had in his presence was love. He was the most loving being. It poured out of his eyes and out of every cell in his being. And I listened to this recently. He said, "I think that if there is anything really unique that has inspired me to do what I do, to go all out, that is, there's no question about it. It always goes back to love. If there is anything that has moved me, it has always been love. There is nothing more mysterious to me. It's not just attraction. There is something more mysterious going on there. The most mysterious of all the synergies I have known is the phenomenon of love. Mm-hmm. I find love to be very close to the phenomenon of gravity." And then he goes into a whole thing where he's talking about the difference between radiation, which is things separating and pulling apart, and gravity, which pulls things together. And so he is talking about this phenomenon of love as a force in the universe, similar to gravity. And he felt it as this power that isn't just some notion in the idea of that we have of each other. It's this power in the universe. And so I feel like, you know, to remember that it's about love, and whatever inspires that, ignites that, expresses that, shares that, receives that, that's going to be the thread. That's going to be the real thing that is going to lead us on this vocation of our deepest calling, because I feel like gravity enfolds us all in the galaxies. And so does love.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. That's just powerful. Just so potent. So if someone, your wisdom, it just pours out of you every time we have you on. If someone wanted to work with you, what would that look like?
There are a variety of things I do. I've done courses and classes. I don't have any of those scheduled right now. I do take private clients. I do have some availabilities that can be found. And with that, what the main source of what we look at is what the dreaming is. The dreaming comes from that place that is totally the unvarnished truth of ourselves, as Jung put it. Their nature, their pure nature. So the dreams don't lie to us. They're a language that has to be learned. So if we interpret them through the waking mind and literally, it can be received as a lie. But if we understand the nature of the dream and work with that, then the truth is spoken.
Right.
So that's what I do. I work with people's dreams, but it doesn't have to be a dream of the night, because life is but a dream, right? I mean, it's our whole life is dreamlike. There's a dreamlike quality to everything in our life. So we look at the dreaming of the world and of our life. And if we have dreams of the night, that's a bonus. Mm-hmm. And I was led in a dream 30 some years ago, probably, to study the tarot. Mm-hmm. So, and I have found that the tarot and the dreams seem to come from the same dimension of the psyche.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. When I first started studying it, the tarot cards would totally amplify my dream from the night before. Mm-hmm. Completely tell me what the dream was about. And the dream would tell me what the cards were saying. It was like they were speaking the same language. So the tarot is sort of like dreaming awake. It's mm-hmm. like calling in those voices that speak to us in dreams.
Yeah.
They speak to us awake in that. So I do that kind of work to help people find their own voice, basically. And that's what the dreams and the oracle will do for you.
Wow.
Yes.
So they can reach you on your website. And if they want to dip their toe in, try the free gift, which is the Dream Symposium.
Absolutely. Yeah. Every month, Jocelyn Mercado and I, or Jocelyn Starfeather, she's changed her name.
Right.
She and I host a Dream Symposium every month where we listen to the dreams of people all over the world. There's powerful guidance and also powerful community and a very strong sense of learning not only what dreams are about, but what they're telling us that we all need to, you know, that yeah. we can all benefit from right now. Yeah. So
as a collective, it's really, I dip in and out and oh my goodness, the power that comes through there is amazing. What you all have started is pretty, pretty potent and powerful. So
yeah. Yes.
Tarya, this has been once again a delight as always, and you've offered us so much wisdom. Thank you so much for being with us today and sharing what you do and what you know.
Well, thank you. It's just a delight and a pleasure always to talk to you, Kathy. You're just such a good interviewer. You draw it out of us. So we are grateful to you.